Let's spend a few more minutes with the Interfaith Alliance interview series, Stay Home, Stay Focused. Here again is Jack Moline.
And we are especially glad to have as our guest to talk today, Andrew Hanauer, who is the president and CEO and founder, if I'm not mistaken, of the One America movement. Andrew, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing a Zoom call from my closet, which is what life is like in the era of Corona when you have small children who can hunt you down wherever you are in the house. So I'm doing okay, though. How are you doing?
Thank you. Doing very well. All our small children are either grown up or living with their parents elsewhere. So we miss them, but we're glad that they're safe.
Good.
So I want to ask you to tell us a little bit about the One America movement, just so our viewers and listeners know what's going on.
Yeah, appreciate it. So One America is an organization that's working against the toxic forms of division in our society. So we all, you know, hear all the stories and talk about polarization. We understand polarization is really the thing that can rip societies apart. It's not so much about, well, are we being civil to each other? It's much more about how do we stick together as a country and be functional enough to actually address the problems and challenges that we have. So we bring religious communities together across political divides and religious divides to work together in their communities. And we do that all over the country.
And you haven't been at this very long, but you've had remarkable success.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, so we're about 3 years old. So we are, I think we're still legally allowed to call ourselves a startup. I don't know, is there a is there a statute of limitations on that? I'm not sure how that works. But yeah, we feel like we've had a lot of success. But I think that the success comes from the fact that I think our divisions are not as big as we think they are. And I think a part of this is that there is something deeply human in us that connects us. And it's something that, you know, Russian Facebook trolls and talk radio and cable news can't get to. And so I think that what we're tapping into is just our natural desire to be together as people and not to be divided in these artificial ways.
What are you focused on other than the safety and security of your family and loved ones right now?
Yeah. So, you know, in the midst of the Corona crisis, we felt, especially since we can't do the work offline that we've been doing, we felt one of the things we could do is just simply start putting more positive content into the internet. So many people are stuck at home. So many people are reading stressful news every day, even if it's not divisive, right? Just the news about the virus itself is so stressful, let alone when we start blaming each other for who's the cause of it. So we started this Love Your Neighbor, you know, sort of a modest campaign just to hashtag Love Your Neighbor, share stories about Americans coming together, doing good things in their community, calling people who are lonely, you know, dropping off supplies for people who need it. And I think the larger question is what happens after this epidemic? And will we as a country rebuild together? Or will this be another thing that we tear each other apart over? And I think that's where we want to have a much bigger impact.
Well, your organization is the One America Movement, not the One America Collection of Anecdotes. So tell us a little bit about the initiatives that you have to try to secure a kinder, gentler nation.
Yeah, absolutely. So on the local level, our chapters consist of congregations. So maybe a conservative evangelical church working with a mosque or a synagogue. And what they do is up to them. But what they do is they do something together in their local community. In West Virginia, that's working to address the opioid epidemic. In Houston and in Puerto Rico, it is working to address the Hurricane Harvey, Hurricane Maria relief needs. You know, in Charlottesville, it's the sort of aftermath of the Unite the Right rally in 2017. So it's really up to the community what they do together. But the act of doing something together, it is a profound way to bring people together.
How do you find the communities to come together like that?
Yeah, you know, we have constituencies that we work with sort of in a core way, and that those are sort of, you know, evangelical Christians of both races or multiple races. We have African-American Christians, Jewish and Muslim communities. And so in any given community, we often have churches or synagogues or whatever that have connections to their fellow church or synagogue in another community. And so we have, for instance, the former policy director from the Southern Baptist Convention on our board. So when we go to a community and we look for a Southern Baptist church, we have that connection point as a starting point.
And you also do training with leadership also, because
we do.
Participated in one of them.
which we're very grateful for. So we think when you have a really divided society, it doesn't just matter if you're bringing people together sort of across groups. It also matters what's happening inside a group, right? So what does it mean to be a Democrat in a country that's divided? Or what does it mean to be a Jew in a country that's divided? And that's shaped in part by how our leaders set the norms for our groups, right? If our politicians say that the definition of being a Democrat is that you hate Republicans, that's very different than if they say it's that you believe in these sets of values.
Right.
So we work with religious leaders to help them navigate the divisions inside their congregations, but also set the norms for their groups as it pertains to communicating across those divides.
So much of what you're doing relies on creating relationships among people.
Yeah.
And in these strange and separated times, that's a very difficult thing to do, mitigated by a screen, as we are right now.
Yeah.
How do you begin to address that without losing the momentum that One America movement has put together?
A couple of things. I mean, I think, first of all, faith leaders are so overwhelmed right now. We talk to clergy. I mean, they're dealing with the issues in their own families that all of us are dealing with, on top of, you know, trying to lead a congregation suddenly online versus in real life. That's extremely stressful. So, you know, for us, I think we're just trying to support the faith leaders we work with right now. We're not trying to create big initiatives that they have to try to think of how to involve themselves with. But the other thing is, I think we've been saying for the length of our existence that there is no tech solution to our crisis as a country. The isolation, the depression, the rise in deaths of opioids and addiction and alcoholism and just deaths of sort of despair is a fundamental brokenness in our country that relates to our lack of togetherness. And there's no app, there's no algorithm that's going to fix that. There's certainly things that can be helpful, but we have to be together. And as we get more and more geographically polarized, that we have communities where more and more you have only people from one party predominantly there, the challenge becomes that much more intense for us to be physically and spiritually together.
So I'm curious as to how you facilitate the connections between these communities. The project I'm most familiar with, because it is most local, is of a large synagogue in Washington, D.C., an urban-based synagogue.
Yeah.
And a rural megachurch, an evangelical white Christian megachurch in West Virginia, mm-hmm. who've come together on a particular topic.
Yeah.
How did you match them, and how in the world did they find this topic?
Well, I think the West Virginia case is a great example. So I met a pastor, amazing guy named Joel Rainey, who's in the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia. Through a mutual connection who's with the Southern Baptist Convention. And I met the rabbi in D.C. A long time ago, but also through our sort of connections with Jewish communities and leaders. And they both had a shared desire to cross that divide, right? I mean, people in Washington, a community where President Trump got 4% of the vote, in the aftermath of 2016, a lot of them were expressing the sense that they had no connection to anyone outside of that sort of bubble. And folks in West Virginia, I think, felt similarly about wanting to connect across those divides. And so that part was easy. They were open to it and that connection. And now working with Adams Mosque as well has been really positive. The issue was also easy because the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia, which is just an hour from D.C., is the epicenter of the opioid crisis in America. And so for the folks in that community, that is absolutely the number one thing that they've been facing.
And and they found this issue themselves. This is not something that One America generated in order to attract them.
No, we have enough challenges in this country. One America is not, we're not needed to help identify them. I think people know what the challenges are that face their communities. What's not happening too often is people are not working together because of 100 issues, real or perceived. And I think it's crazy to say we don't agree on abortion, so we can't work together on immigration or opioids or anything else. I think that's so counterproductive. So that's a big part of what we're trying to do.
You've mentioned a couple of times the people who are part of your network. I'm very proud to be one of those people. Yep. I'm not on your board, and I'm not asking for an invitation. But I did notice that you have an extraordinary and diverse group of people who serve on the board of One America Movement. How did you put that group of people together?
Yeah, well, first of all, you don't want to attend more board meetings? That's not something that you're looking to do right now in your life?
Right now, Andrew, I would attend any meeting that would get me out of the house, but I don't think it's going to happen.
That's a good strategy if we're trying to get more board members. We'll just offer them the chance to leave their homes. We're really proud of who we are, and who we are is we're trying to live internally what we're preaching to the world. So our board of our chair of our board is a Muslim woman, a fantastic immigration attorney. Our vice chair is Dr. Brian Williams, an African American doctor who many people may have remembered from when he treated the white police officer shot at the rally in Dallas a few years back. We have someone from the Cato Institute, Southern Baptist Convention, the George Bush administration. Our board meetings are interesting. I mean, let's be clear. We have disagreements. We have things that we deeply disagree on. My favorite example maybe is we have the lead attorney in the Heller case on the pro-gun rights side. And on our leadership circle, we have the founder of Rabbis Against Gun Violence. And they like each other. And they have had conversations even that have advance their sort of understanding of each other's perspectives. So we're trying to do what we're telling other people to do and not just preach it to others.
Well, that's great. And before I change the subject, I want to make sure that the people who are watching and listening know how they can find out more about the One America Movement.
Thank you. I appreciate that. OneAmericaMovement.org. We're on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, I think Instagram. We're working on it. Startup, designation still. So, but you can find us on social media on the internet.
And there's some wonderful stuff to look at, I promise you, if you go to any of those places. Yeah. The promotion of a specific drug by the administration for the treatment of COVID-19, mm-hmm. on which a number of people in this country, a lot of people in this country, are dependent for ongoing chronic conditions, including a member of your extended family.
Yeah.
Will you talk about that and the challenges it presents a little bit?
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate you bringing that up. Yeah, so there's a drug, Plaquenil, or I think it's hydroxychloroquine is the technical name.
I'm glad you said it and I didn't have it.
Yeah, but I've memorized it more recently. People who have lupus and some forms of arthritis take that pill. For my family member, it's very much life-saving medication. And because it is now a potential help in the fight against coronavirus, although we don't really know for sure, whether that's true or not, it's very early in the sort of testing and so forth. Many people, including my family member, have been told to ration their pills. They have been denied getting access to their pills. And so, I know there's a lupus caucus in the in Congress, bipartisan, an arthritis caucus, bipartisan. They've sent letters to the administration just asking for help to make sure that people who are taking these pills regularly are just able to have access to them. They know they can continue to take their regular dose, even as we try to figure out if it can be helpful for coronavirus. So that's where we're at.
This helps us illustrate something that we all need to be attentive to, and that is that the coronavirus is not the only health problem in this country at the moment. Yep. People who have chronic conditions continue to have those chronic conditions.
Yeah.
People will continue, in spite of the social isolation that we're attempting to promote or the social distancing, they will continue to have all the usual illnesses that people come down with. Yeah. And to sort of bring it back to the topic we were talking about earlier, there are people who are suffering from addictions and dependencies who need to be treated, yeah, or at least to maintain, and who are now isolated by these necessary practices to preserve the general population. So I'm glad this is an opportunity for us to remind people not to lose focus, that in spite of the changes to our day-to-day life, normal life, whatever that is, continues in spite of the presence of this invisible danger in our midst.
So, yeah. No, I appreciate that.
So, Andrew, we're pretty much near the end of our time here. And the last question I ask each of my guests is to offer something that would inspire or engage the people who are watching and listening from their homes, that can take them above their concerns for family and friends.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Rabbi. And I also just want to say, you know, congrats on the great work that you're doing at Interfaith Alliance. It's really incredible. And I really, really glad for what you guys are doing. I think that we should remember that things are hard right now, but things have been hard for a lot of people for a long time. And for those of us who are lucky enough to have a paycheck, for those of us who are lucky enough to have a roof, to have food, this is an opportunity to really ask ourselves hard questions, to look in the mirror and say, what kind of people do we want to be, right? Not when things are easy and simple, but when things are complicated and difficult. And I think this is a moment where we can actually reconnect with who we're supposed to be, and not just be devoured by the fear and uncertainty that we get from our cell phones. And so I hope that people have this opportunity, take this opportunity to really ask themselves that question, and then come up with really good answers.
I thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Interfaith Alliance continues its weekday series of Facebook Live conversations conducted by Rabbi Jack Moline, titled Stay Home, Stay Focused, weekdays at 12:15 p.m. Eastern Time, at facebook.com/interfaithalliance. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, let me say a very sincere thank you. Your generous support of this program is vital to keeping us on the air. If you think there's value in what you've heard here, and you think it's important that others hear it as well, please make your contribution today. Find more information at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. And do you know someone who you think might benefit from hearing what you're hearing? Please commit to sharing State of Belief with just one person this week. Social media is a great way to do that. So many of us are isolated right now, and it can be profoundly comforting to come together around shared values, ideas, and ideals. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcasts on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. And take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter and be a part of the conversation. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Strange times continue. Anxieties about getting back to normal disturb us. I guarantee you that faithful listeners to State of Belief are together sharing questions, grief, a broad spectrum of thoughts, and a nervous hope. We're all together, friends. So until we meet again on this show, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.